There is a halfway mark between the known and unknown. A middle ground or chamber where divine wisdom and truth reside. In this middle chamber, we will explore and expose the ruling paradigms of social engineering, mind control, government conspiracies, and cover-ups. Join us as we navigate the territories and boundaries of natural law and the ancient principles of the sacred feminine and divine masculine. Examine and consider alternative energy systems, holistic healing arts, and wild soulful living to train our awareness in a most novel and abstract manner to view reality from an entirely new perspective. Welcome to the Middle Chamber.
Greetings once again, ladies and gentlemen. It is I, your hyperdimensional host for the duration, Freighter X. Welcome to another episode of The Middle Chamber. We are accompanied on this journey, as always, by my wife and co-conspirator, the lovely and amazing Mater X. Say hello to all the folks listening out there. Love?
Hello, folks. How's it going?
All right. Well, we are so excited, aren't we, to have this guest today on the podcast. Before we get to our main part of the show, we would like to thank SyncBook Radio for giving us a new home over here at thesyncbook.com. Thanks to Alan and Doug and all the rest of Team Sync. We really, it's just been a great transition, and we're really excited about the future. We also wanted to, really quick, I wanted to direct everyone to the Olympia Sync Summit Indiegogo campaign. You can find a link to that on any of this show's internet outposts, such as middlechamberfx.wordpress.com. Or my blog, freighterx.blogspot.com, also on Facebook, FreighterX first name, MaterX last name, and of course we have the Middle Chamber Facebook page as well, and the SyncBook Radio Network site also, so that's thesyncbook.com. So if you are planning to go to the summit on August 8th and 9th in Olympia, Washington, or simply want to help us make this event happen, please give to the Olympia Sync Summit Indiegogo campaign. I really believe we are spearheading a new philosophy with Sync and synchro mysticism for the record. And I think one day, you never know, there might be documentaries made about our little Type 1 civilization vision, the Friendship Agenda, the Free Your Mind conferences, the Sync Book media phenomenon. Call it delusions of grandeur, if you will. Stranger things have happened, ladies and gentlemen. So thinking in terms like this, all of you listening, if you want to help, please help make history with us. And thanks to Rizzo and the Maniac Agenda for our brilliant intro, the originally produced intro from the Maniac Agenda. As I've said, you guys really knocked it out of the park with this one, so thanks again. Well, okay, so we are so excited to be here with you all listening out there today. We have gotten some great feedback on our new format here with the podcasts at the SyncBook Radio Network. So we're really excited. And a quick reminder also, the Secret War on Human Consciousness Free Your Mind Conference 2 presentation video by yours truly is on sale now at the website, middlechamberfx.wordpress.com, also over at freemantv.com, many other sites as well on the web. So buy a copy today. Help us raise funds for the Middle Chamber Summer Tour. That's right. Familia X is venturing forth once more into the great wide open. Great wide open, right, Mater X?
That is correct. We are going to be on a West Coast tour for the beginning, or at least middle of the summer.
That's right.
And I'm very excited, actually.
Yeah, me too. And the kids are getting excited about it, too. And it's going to be another adventure in the history of our family here. So in just a moment, we will welcome our extra special guest for this episode's chat. Speaking of chats, this show's chat room can be found at middlechamberchat.chatango.com or you can go to the website, our website, to find the link. Now, I'm hoping that people will catch on, that we will be in the chat room Saturday nights at 9 p.m. Central Standard Time when we release these podcasts each week. So join us there if you'd like, chat about the show or whatever. You know, you can ask us questions about anything. We're just going to monitor it. We'd like to kind of start a little tradition of having people come and review the podcast with us on Saturday nights at 9 p.m. Central. So anyways, that's what we're...
Also, I was thinking that maybe people who aren't able to listen to the immediate release, you know, they can also get on the chat room when they've got the time and just throw something out there, and we can all start a discussion that way too.
Very good point. We can go ahead and have a back and forth over time elapse. It doesn't have to be real time. Somebody could drop, you know, feedback or questions or whatever. So we just want to make people aware. MiddleChamberChat.chitango.com. Okay, so before we welcome our esteemed guest for this podcast, I just wanted to say a few words, you know, as often I do at the beginning of an exciting discussion such as this, because this week in our podcast, we will continue our ongoing voyage of discovery, examining all things magical and occulted or hidden, the Hidden Path show, and the, you know, the ongoing Hidden Path show on the Middle Chamber. We will unpack and review what many consider extremely controversial material, because we're not afraid to look where others cannot or dare not look. You know, we will launch our discussion from a fundamental belief in metaphysics, standing in stark contrast with all the materialists out there worshiping scientific observation as the almighty. You know, not to say that there isn't a context or a place for scientific observation in things, it's just that it's not the end-all and be-all of existence. And we still... You know, we embrace the notion, the metaphysical aspects and conditions of reality, the greater reality, which eludes everyday awareness, usually. And I've said time and time again that I will continue to do, I'll continue to say this to my last breath, because I believe it is my mission, that Western esoteric systems of spiritual development, the occult sciences or hermetic arts, magic, the mystery traditions in general, are tools and devices for inviting transformative change into consciousness. And these vehicles, if you will, vehicles, transport us to altered and heightened states of awareness so that we can step into the circuitry of the cosmos, as our good friend and magical mentor Lon Milo Duquette likes to say. And just maybe we might come into contact, conscious contact, with divine intelligences which govern the universe and our very own inner natures. This reality is not easily discernible, not with everyday awareness anyways, of the normal five senses, that's for sure, but there are methods to retrain, to refocus, to readjust, to fine-tune, if you will. As we have discussed often here on this show, the dilemma of everyday awareness remains, it persists, and most people are locked in that narrow awareness frequency bandwidth of strictly sensory materialism. Now, I know it is very difficult for some to consciously approach the metaphysical reality, and for others it may even seem impossible. But just as with the universal principles of our physical universe, such as like gravitics or thermodynamics, whether we choose to ignore them or not, we are still subjected to them in our everyday reality, in that if you jump off a cliff, you know, chances are you're going to fall. And if you plunge your hand into a fire, a roaring fire, you're probably going to get burned under normal, everyday physical conditions. And so these same universal principles of natural law, they maintain the same constancy within our universe. You know, that's just something to consider. Now, you know, my story is unique because, for all intents and purposes, I was raised in a magical household. My mother becoming she actually became a practicing pagan when I was a preteen. Even in our everyday in entertainment and leisure, magic seemed ever-present in my household. My father was immersed in Tolkien fantasy literature, myth, and poetry, and every winter he would reread the quote-unquote trilogy, as he effectively referred to the Lord of the Rings series. He gave me my first illustrated version of The Hobbit way back in 1979 when I was just 9 years old, and after this, you know, it just progressed. I found the world of choose-your-own-adventure stories and then role-playing games such as Dungeons & Dragons and Advanced Dungeons & Dragons and a whole score of others. And, you know, that's how it started for me. Now, my mother, after progressing from psychoanalysis and self-hypnosis in the late 70s to various rational emotive techniques to process the wreckage of her own upbringing, my mother joined a women's studies energy group in the 80s, which was very common around that time. It was a very hip, new age kind of thing to do, which this group kind of evolved into a neo-pagan, Wiccan, magical circle. And basically, I was invited to participate often, and I did. And this is where my early ceremonial magical training began in this, what could be considered a coven. And my mother was the one who brought me my first copy of Scott Cunningham's Solitary Practitioner's Guide to Wicca. And this was in my mid-teens, which I practiced on and off for the next 10 years. And before, during, and after a brief and painful return and departure from the Christian church, that is, you know. But in my early 20s, I discovered the deeper aspects of the Celtic Druid studies, as well as my own research into goddess studies and worship. And this was more to my liking. And this, of course, led me eventually to everything we've talked about the last few years, especially my various Masonic Lodge affiliations and other magical orders or quasi-Masonic magical orders. I belong to the BOTA, the BOTA, and the Ancient Order of Druids in America. And this is how magic was introduced to me, though, by my own mother, the number one caretaker, source of all love and protection. She handed me a toolbox for reshaping consciousness, aiding healing and integration in myself. So I can attest to you only that, you know, all of you listening, the only malevolence I've ever experienced has been in the, you know, imaginary Hollywood fiction aspects or other people's questionable disturbed reports and accounts, which are few and far between. So this is what's been my experience. So it is from this perspective that I and we approach this material. You know, magic is, in fact, I would say, my religion. It is the basis for my entire spiritual approach, and most importantly, magic and art, to me, are one and the same. They're interchangeable. I see no real difference between magic or all forms of art. I see them both as equal creative expressions of the aspects and qualities of our energetic universe. And the vision I was given long ago is the realization that Western mysteries, the occult, hermetic, esoteric traditions of knowledge and wisdom, were humanity's lost shamanic birthright, our lost or stolen heritage. And we have identified, you know, in this show and many others, the multi-generational program to suppress or repress the spiritual truths of human existence to the benefit of the few, and the true reality and nature of all life and consciousness around us, always and forever. But that's beside the point. Inevitably, what it comes down to is your own personal responsibility. And on a final note, let us consider and keep in mind, in the everyday world of our waking consciousness, life forms such as people, animals, plants, etc., we perceive these as living beings. On the other hand, symbols such as triangles or pentagrams, letters, numbers, or sigils, etc., we perceive as abstractions, springboards to a variety of ideas, concepts, and aspects. In the magical world, it's just the opposite. When we see a life form such as an angel or a demon or a dragon or a unicorn, etc., it might be seen as an abstract personification of an idea or ideal, whereas symbols and emblems, on the other hand, they are the living beings on that plane of existence, the true life forms of the magical universe. It's something to consider. So, you know, with all that said, I'm really excited to have the opportunity. I really want to thank Curtis Davis from the Occult Network, who basically made me aware of our guest on the podcast today, which I'm really so excited and honored to be able to have a chance to speak with this gentleman about his research and his life's work as well, and like to see what he has to say about what I've just shared with you all now. So without any delay, I'm going to turn it over to my lovely wife, Mater X.
Ah, shucks. Okay, everyone. Tonight we have the honor and the privilege of welcoming a real visionary, practitioner and writer, a way shower and healer, Andrea Vidimus, from Deeper Down the Rabbit Hole. Mr. Vidimus is the author of the modern magical classic, Hands-on Chaos Magic, Reality Manipulation Through the Ovaiki, I hope I said that properly, which is also published
in Magic on the Edge Anthology, the Manifesting Prosperity Anthology, the Pop Culture Anthology, and the Best of Kauntown Magazine Anthology. Andrea holds the highest initiatory rank in Haitian Vodou, and that of Haugen Asagwe, and is a Usui and Karuna Reiki Master, and Neuro-Linguistic Programming Carol's Practitioner, I'm sorry, and a licensed hypnotherapist. And currently, Andre Vitimus is a faculty at Peter Carroll's Acronorium College, and Andrea is the host of the international successful radio show Deeper Down the Rabbit Hole, and has taught at conventions across the Midwest, including Starwood, Sirius Rising, Babylon Rising, Convocation, The Real Witch's Ball, and various pagan prides and more. Many thanks for joining us here in the Middle Chamber, Andrea Vitimus.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
I really hope that I didn't butcher that.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's all good, right?
It absolutely is. Well, thank you once again. Greetings, and it's really awesome to have you here, Andrea. So, you know, just to jump right in, I wanted to give you an opportunity just to, right before we started talking about this great book that you've written, just to kind of give you, what I like to do for all of our new friends. I hope this is the beginning of a long relationship. I hope we can have a continuing back and forth dialogue. And so at the beginning, we'd like to just find out a little bit about who we're talking to. And maybe you could just tell us what led you to where you are today and what you've got going on.
Well, that's a long story.
Well, <yeah.
laughs> But right now I'm kind of pursuing to a which it says kind of a dichotomy that will be obvious in some of the things we talk about is I'm pursuing an MBA right now, and this is my second master's degree. So it's the metaphysics I try to integrate with every part of my life. So, and the magic. So it's not just a matter of I do rituals and there's no improvement in my life. My life is the metric that I'm measuring for how well I understand the metaphysics.
Sure. I get you.
So that I'm about to start that. I recently, although I was the host of Deeper Down the Rabbit Hole, I turned it over to my co-host for a little while so I could deal with the MBA and start working on a second book, which I've been trying to write, but it goes so slowly. Like, I need to put the caffeine in my veins directly, I think.
Oh, I hear you. I'm working on a book myself. I know how it is.
So, yeah. Originally, one of the things is that I actually grew up as an altar boy and eventually became a pretty hardcore atheist before getting into the magical path. So I come from the place of a skeptic. And unfortunately, the universe is not kind to skeptics who, in all cases, where they want you to understand something. So I do not think that having that skeptical background is bad, though. I think it's one of the most beautiful gifts that a practicing magician or metaphysician can have is to be somewhat skeptical and to verify, is this working or not? And a lot of my history comes from me fighting against the fact that magic is real. I'm past that point now. And then second, carrying that scientific inquiry and skepticism into my work. And making sure that, you know, am what I'm saying something that is real, or is it just something that's wishful thinking? And how do you go about verifying whether or not something is actually happening and the results that you expect actually are occurring? This is probably one of the biggest problems that in all of the occult and metaphysics is, and why scientists attack metaphysics because there's no proof. But it actually turns out you can actually get pretty good evidence, just not necessarily completely linear evidence.
Well, you know, you make a really great point. That's really why I made an allotment in my opening points that I just, there is a place for science. There is a place for quantifiable and qualifiable observation, no doubt. It's just that we've moved so far, I think, in the pendulum shift in the opposite direction with that scientific materialism, the sensory materialism. We've done it to the expense of the metaphysical reality, you know, throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
It's also somewhat not helpful. Scientific materialism has it certainly, it's a place, but there's aspects as you get deeper and deeper and deeper into quantum physics that it falls apart, or it seems to have difficulty. And things seem to sound like various things that are either said in the Vedic texts, which are the Hindu texts, or other places. And the fact is that although science would like to say, not science in general, I'm a big advocate of science, but although many of the hard materialist scientists who also, in a way, have a certain religion, it is religious tenets in some ways, would like to say that none of this stuff is possible. The truth is that even at a core level, even if everything was completely a lie, the mere fact that the techniques of occultism create changes in people's lives mean that they successfully change ideas within their heads, which means the systems are valid in themselves. Now, I don't necessarily believe it's all in anyone's head, but merely the fact that it creates changes in the psychological makeup and cognitive structure of people to the point that their lives can directly improve means that such a dismissal is not so easy to do, even within the confines of science.
Hear, hear. That's right. You know, one of the greatest outcomes and results of our modern society is the conclusions of the physicists that they've moved towards a more mystical stance. They've actually finally come to terms with what we term quantum entanglement, you know, the problem of consciousness that they always avoided, you know, for, 100 years they've tried to avoid that, but they've had to come to terms with it, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, in a way, I think some of the best magicians could look at without the dogma that some scientists have, look at the methods of science. And this is really something that I think both of you, having read my book, really saw that there's a lot about the methods of science in that book, even though I don't state it in Hands on Chaos Magic. It's clear I'm trying to set out the methods of science. You can get a lot by applying those methods to your own religious practice and your own spiritual practice, if people prefer to not use the word religious.
Well, that's a great launching place right there. Let's talk about that, because what you do, I think, is you carry the torch that, you know, Peter Carroll and the other chaos magicians started, you know, decades ago. You've really taken that and sort of distilled it down into your own mechanical manual, as it were, and you've provided, I think, a really approachable, you know, simplified guide that is complex and does, as you say, set up a dynamic which could be considered a scientific approach.
Yeah, and I mean, I wrote the book for a I'm glad that everyone likes the book, but I wrote it for a really specific audience, actually. In some ways, I was writing the book for myself, and I was writing the book based on what I would have liked to have through what was a pretty gnarly shamanic initiation, as in not the type of initiations where you go to the Golden Dawn or the OTO and they, you know, raise their hands and bless you, but I mean where the spirits really threaten your life until you make some changes. And that's pretty classical shamanic initiations. And that's what was necessary for me to accept the realities of magic, because otherwise I was well on the way of becoming a biochemist, a pure physical scientist. And I didn't get too far from that because I got a master's degree in computer science, so go figure. But that's exactly it in a nutshell. Is breaking things down gives you an opportunity to really see how this works. And you can't break things down if you're really sold on how correct you are.
Oh, that's a great one. Great point. It's not a big surprise that you would have plunged yourself into that natural science and quantifiable reality, because, you know, realizing maybe whether you consciously or unconsciously realize at the time that we only have this limited scope of potentiality, you might as well hurl yourself into some sort of material science, because you can control results and find, you know, find some sort of certainty in that limited scope that we are, you know, provided with, I think, in social imprintation. But one little point you made about how what you thought about when you, who you were writing this book for, I know that Mater X and I were talking about this today, about how we wondered whether I took the stance, and she agreed, but she had her own views as well, that this book was great for a beginner. Somebody who hadn't even had any kind of experience with magic could pick this up and really use it as a basic how-to guide. But also, you know, it could also be for someone with experience that had more understanding of the material that we're, you know, you're covering in the book.
That was the hope. Initially, when I wrote the book, it was intended for somebody going through, like I said, a really gnarly initiation from the spiritual side. I know that's a controversial topic in itself, that the spirits can initiate somebody into magic, but more often than not, for people that I've seen have real skill and ability at actually manipulating physical reality, there seems to be some sort of event that occurs that pushes them in that direction. And why wouldn't there be? Our whole society in every way tells you this stuff's not real. You know, it would take such an event to push people towards that in some ways. Not everyone, but a lot of people.
Well, I myself have always kind of had an interest in magic, but not really done any kind of research, you know. Never really thought magic wasn't real. Always kind of believed in it and everything, but never got into learning how to do rituals or anything until I met Frater X. And, you know, he's really, like he said, he'd already had quite a bit of an exposure to it. And his mother is just she's amazing person. And so her interest and his interest kind of awakened my own latent desire to get to know the magical side, or at least learn some more about it. But I kind of have gotten sidetracked with raising children and regular everyday life stuff, and so my book list is insanely high. but I did, as he said, I found it to be a very almost familiar, easy to follow guide to, or at least the beginning. I haven't really gotten as far as Frater X has in your book, but from what I've read, it's a good launching pad, I think, at least into chaos magic, even though I don't know that you've gotten specifically so much into what chaos magic is, at least to the point where I'm at right now. But it's still a good, a great, like, as he said, how to guide to get yourself. I like how you spend a lot of time teaching or telling how to ground yourself and get yourself into the right frame of mind in order to get to a place where you can start to do the rituals.
Well, thank you. One of the things that I didn't want to do was just rehash Peter Carroll, because Peter Carroll's a friend of mine. So it's much more of a hands-on training guide. And if you want to get very technical about it, it fills in the gaps of Lieber KKK and Lieber, the adept training program that Peter Carroll actually suggests, but doesn't give you any details in Lieber Null and Psychonaut. So I didn't go into that much about exactly what chaos magic was, mostly because I thought it would already been covered well enough by Phil Hine and Peter Carroll, and the initial name for the book was not Hands-On Chaos Magic, so.
Well, but just for the sake of the listeners out there who might not really be familiar with all this material, Andrea, could you just kind of give us a glossed over, kind of a brief summary of you know, how you would present the chaos magical system?
Absolutely. First, There may be no such thing as chaos magic. It's an idea. An idea which values practical testing over authority, and an idea that contains one simple idea within it, that there may be no ultimate truth. And that belief is what either connects you to, or in a more traditional form, is what produces the results in the physical or mental planes. Essentially, your belief and intention is what does it. And any of the other truths you might assign are just things that you're assigning to the universe, that it's ultimately formless.
So that brings a funny little idea to my head. I almost wanted to say maybe we should, instead of chaos magic, we could call it anarchy magic, because of the ironic thing where people equate anarchy with chaos, and yet anarchy really meaning like self-rule, self-government, and kind of that mentality. It's really just a random thought, not disagreeing.
Yeah, it's an interesting parallel.
It's chaos magic is really in the same vein as a lot of postmodern fields. It's the postmodern occultism. And you have postmodern science, which is quantum science, and chaos mathematics, which, by the way, chaos mathematics is where the word chaos magic comes from, for Peter Carroll.
Did not know that.
He actually he's a physicist. Well, he's a physicist, businessman, but he loves physics. So, in addition, you have postmodern literature, you have postmodern art, all of these postmodern type of styles of culture deal with the same kind of issue, that the meaning is whatever you apply to it, of whatever you're doing. It's the same idea that has run through almost all of the 20th century's type of science, biology, all the things come down to this idea of there may not be an ultimate truth, that the ultimate meaning might be a derived meaning that is created when you observe something. Chaos magic is the occult version of that. It is really the rebellion against the priests, the priests who would claim authority based only on how old the text is. It's without claiming authority based on what you can actually do. So it's kind of steeped into a lot of Buddhist concepts and punk rock at the same time.
I was just going to say, I think that chaos magic reminds me of like Zen magic. It's like the Zen of magic, you know? The non-dualistic magical approach.
Yeah, and Peter Carroll was very open about the fact that he ripped a bunch from Buddhism, like as he understood it, right? Which you should be able to do, because it's ultimately a meta system that's looking at all the other systems of magic, all the other thinking, world thinking processes of magic, and saying, when we go from one system to another, how is this possible this still works? This is where you really get chaos magic, is where you actually work with one system of magic for like 5 years. You get it down and you're getting results. And within about a couple years, most people can get pretty good results from a system of magic if they really put themselves into it. And then you just throw up your hands and go do a different system of magic. And it works. Even though the ideas behind the two systems of magic fundamentally would say that the truth is they cannot both be true at the same time and get results. That's when you really get why there has to be something like chaos magic.
Well, you've come back around to quantum entanglement, really. It's what it is. It's the idea that, you know, the malleability of consciousness. Think about it. Magic springs forth from the shamanistic traditions, who were just making it up as they went along, in many ways, you could say, because they were following their own inspiration, following their own inner guide, you know? And it turned into these elaborate systems of magic that we have passed down through the generations. You get down to a place where it's almost retrograde or retrospectively gone back to that shamanistic tradition with the chaos magical system.
There's a lot of that. I mean, although, chaos magicians themselves will use any of the other systems as means. And this is one of the critiques of Chaos Magic, is that they don't really, and on the internet, this is a fair critique, that people will pick and choose between systems, throw things together. But that has never been the case of anything I've seen of any serious Chaos Magician. And I'm not talking about Facebook Chaos Magicians. Some serious Chaos Magicians will honestly know more about the systems they're working in than people who practice in the system, because they want to know the nuanced mechanisms of how this stuff works. And they have a nuanced experimental and scientific, in a lot of cases, approach to the system. So they really understand the system they're trying to work in. This is something that on the internet you couldn't see that, but I guarantee you, by the people I know, this is actually what happens in practice. That they are really kind of get to be subject area experts in multiple fields, and there's no laziness, because what laurels can you rest on if there may not be any ultimate truth? So you have to keep moving forward. You have to keep improving and keep going and trying to understand more and more.
Well, I think it's fascinating and it's very exciting. I really do. I'm really really looking forward to reviewing more material on this and just, you know, experimenting on my own with it, because I think that it's really a great progression, a great evolution of personal practice.
Agreed.
So anyways, well, you know, moving forward from this point, let's talk about the college, Arcanum?
Arcanorium.
Arcanorium College. This is exciting because I got to tell you, as I mentioned to you earlier, I'm kind of playing around with my own idea for an online educational system. So I'm really excited with what I see developing over there in the Arcanorium Cants. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, sure. Peter Carroll basically runs this college. It's almost free. I mean, what he charges is basically enough to keep out, as he said, keep out the haters. So it's like $15 a month. And there's so many great other presenters there, and I will present classes there. And the courses are basically just forum courses where we give out material and people work through it. And then we have a kind of civil discussion. So it's now there's a degree that he's working on, Peter is, and people can get a degree in magic from Peter Carroll. And rest assured, that means more of a much more of a practical degree than understanding of all correspondences. So, you know, there's many, many teachers of different flavors there, and it's a great experience, really. For $15 a month, you really can't beat it. I think it might be £15, so that might be a little bit more. And basically, that Peter is pretty open about the fact that no one really makes money on this. It's just to keep the site running and keep the maintenance going.
And what course do you are you involved with there, Andrea?
Let's see. I've taught in three courses, and I'm getting together a fourth one soon. But so far, I've taught a class on astral magic and how to do astral magic, which, by the way, is the end of the last few chapters in Hands on Chaos Magic, is about astral magic and performing magic without tools. I've taught a course on information magic, which is basically energy work, without using the troublesome word energy, and looking at information as something that you can directly use your five senses to manipulate reality through meditation and active spirituality. I've taught a class on beginning voodoo, chaotic style voodoo, mostly New Orleans voodoo. So I've taught those three classes so far. And then I may, as soon as I get things a little less crazy, teach a course on fire magic as the next course.
Andrea, is there a difference between voodoo and hoodoo?
Yeah, actually. Hoodoo is more of a collection of different sorcery techniques. It's It does have religious elements to it, but voodoo is a full religion, and it has a full aspect of the spirituality and how you should act and all the components of a religion. Where hoodoo, there is community expectations, but it's less formal. And it's more like a collection of folk techniques of magical operations.
How did you get involved with the hoodoo and the voodoo? How did you get involved with this, Andrea?
Well, I've always had an interest in folk magic. After I got through the first gnarly initiation, a lot of the folk wisdom I tend to go back to. I like doing it more than the astral magic, even though I'm quite good at the astral magic. It just leaves me in too much of a headspace, a weird headspace that I would rather tangibly get my hands and feel the herbs and stuff like that when I'm doing the magic. The voodoo stuff was very interesting. You know, I was just sitting there, and then one day I was doing an internet search on something random and came across the Veve Papalegba and woke up about 3 hours later in my chair. Then kept having conversations and dreams with this entity. I'm like, well, who are you and why should I care? And every time I asked him, like, well, if you're what you say you are, can you go do this? He did it. So eventually, you know, it became clearer and clearer that this entity was not going away. And so I learned as much as I could about voodoo, and to the point that I got initiated.
So let me just clarify this. So you learned from this disembodied entity, and you verified it through actual voodoo organizations.
Well, yeah, that, and asked him to do things for me, and would verify the results. So literally, I would give him. I would say, "Well, you're supposed to be this person, okay?" And did some research, and you want me to believe that you're going to be a part of my life, well, show me. And they did. They showed me physical, tangible results each time that I would ask for anything. So, really, I don't ignore those kind of things, and started pursuing it.
Okay. Well, now, let me ask you also, just jump into another topic just a little bit, sort of a sidestep on this. You're involved with a yearly event called Convocation. Could you tell people that are listening a little bit about what that is and what goes on with that?
Well, Convocation is a Midwest pagan and occult conference. It somewhat tends to be a big party for some people, but there's some very talented speakers there, and people present workshops on various occult and metaphysical topics. I usually run full rituals on Saturday night or Friday night that are quite life-changing. And there's many different rituals. There's many different pagan and occult leaders. It tends to bias a little towards pagans, but it's still a fantastic time.
Yeah, when we first introduced you, there's a whole list of events that seem to be going on in the Midwest. Now, for people who are listening, anyone that would want to find out more about these different events that are going on, where would you direct them to get more information?
For convocations, just go to convocation.org. That's probably the best one. That's probably the biggest event in the Midwest. Outside of Starwood, just search on Starwood Wisteria. I don't have the website with me, but it's...
I'm sure that'll be enough. It's easy enough nowadays with the different search engines, just have keyword searches.
Yeah. This year I'm actually, because of the NBA, I can't go to Starwood. So, but it's a pretty big, another big pagan festival. So,
where does that take place, Andrea?
Southern Ohio. So it's in Wisteria, which is a campground near Athens, Ohio. out in the Hocking Hills.
Sure. Okay, now, another thing that came up when I was thinking about different things we could talk about is I wondered, you know, we have a lot of people, because of the subject matter that we like to review and unpack in our podcast, we're not afraid to look at stuff that other people are, you know, sometimes aren't as maybe as brave to broach subjects, and they, but once we start talking about things, I have a lot of people that contact me that say things like, you know, I'm a total novice, a beginner, an unknown, and I don't know anything about these things, but I feel curiously drawn to them, and where should I begin? There seems like so many different directions to go, and I don't know which way to turn, and I try to offer, you know, I ask some questions individually and try to offer them suggestions based on what I get back from them. What would you say to the beginners out there, the novices that are listening, people who feel drawn, you know, the words we speak resonate with them deeply and they feel that passion within to find out more about the mysteries in our 21st century modern day? What would you say to them as far as where to look and what to do?
Start doing something, like literally. Bust out something and do something. You'll learn more by doing than you will by reading any book. And I know this is going to be opposite what many of the Golden Dawn and more ceremonial magician type influences will say, but the truth is that magic has to be integrated into who you are, and that doesn't happen until you start doing it. So you have to, yes, do some research, but start doing it. Pick up something. You know, my book, Hands on Chaos Magic, is great because it guide you through just the beginning steps, but just do something every day. It could be something as simple as just relaxing and controlling your breath, and literally you'll see it makes a difference in your luck and things like that. These are not things that from a book are easily explained. It really is. The more you do, the more you'll get out of all the books that you can read. The more you'll understand what you're actually reading. And the more you understand where to go with things. It isn't a matter of, in the age of the internet, I would hate to say that someone would pirate my book, but I know they have. And I know that there's all kinds of information you can get from a Google search. But ultimately, the most important thing is do something today. If you're interested and you've been interested and you're passionate about it, try something. And don't worry about the results. I mean, yes, record the results. Yes, pay attention to what happens. But just try it and then see what happens. Be a scientist, like a scientist magician, a scientist sorcerer. Go out there and see what will happen when you just try it. You'll learn more than you ever possibly would imagine, and in a lot faster time than you ever would think you would.
Well, that really makes a lot of sense, actually. I mean, I definitely am the kind of person who learns better by doing. I also do limit myself, though, find reasons why I can't necessarily do something. You talk about that in your book, especially in the beginning, about thinking that you just don't have the time to do X and Y and whatnot. Something that I have to work on, have been trying to work on. I found it kind of funny though, that like when you were in your breathing techniques section, that you actually put in lamas. I mean, it really made sense. And I've done yoga a lot in my life. And so the breathing exercises are familiar to me too, and doing that kind of stuff for relaxation. But also having birthed several children, to have that as one of the relaxation techniques was kind of funny. And as I said before, oddly familiar.
Well, thank you. So one of the things, that I harp on a lot is this idea of the time thing, right? It could be as little as 15 minutes a day. The thing is that every component in our modern society will work against any type of real self-discovery. And it's by design. I mean, I don't want to be conspiratorial, but what do people think advertising is about? It isn't, if you're doing the breath work and you're doing sigil magic, and you're making servers, and you're empowering your life, and you're getting rid of things in your psyche that trouble you, all these things probably are the opposite of what would generate more profits for various companies and corporations. And I don't mean to be conspiratorial, but really...
Oh, go right ahead and be conspiratorial.
Yeah, you're perfectly free to be.
That kind of talk is welcome here.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really a conspiracy. You just have to follow what marketing actually is about. It's about creating artificial desires for artificial things that chances are you probably don't need. If you needed them, you wouldn't need advertising. And really, our whole society is based upon these kinds of illusions. And when you start doing self-development work, everything seems to get in the way. You know, from you have too much work to do, and you're stressed, and, you know, you have to worry about the kids, and there's all kinds of excuses. Why are you wasting your time, it comes down to? Because it's much easier to stay within the idea of, you know, go out and buy X, Y, and Z, and you'll be happy. Well, that never works, yeah.
Sometimes my problem gets to be where I find myself with a little bit of time, and everything comes to a head at the same time. Like, all the ideas that have been percolating all along when I was, you know, working throughout the day or whatever, and finally I've got that 10, 15 minutes to myself or whatever. I've got so much going on that it's hard for me to focus on one thing that I want to do.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Me too. And
that's part of it too, right? Because we live in a culture where you have to keep shifting your focus very quickly.
Right.
So everything teaches us to shift our focus from one thing to the next in, like, what is it, 160 characters or less Twitter snippets, right?
Right.
Yeah.
MTV used to be the example of, you know, but actually if you actually study science and realize that movies, there's probably a reason some people who used to like movies, now they can't stand them, is because the stimuli per second in movies keeps increasing. Literally, everything is throwing more and more at you at the same time.
Oh, definitely. It's almost like overload.
It is purposefully overload, because there's one of the other degrees I have is a psychology degree to try to explain all this magic stuff away. That didn't work so well. But the notion that you can overwhelm people's critical thinking by throwing so many things at is well established within cognitive science. And what does Hands on Chaos Magic say? What does this guy Andrea Vitamus says? Sit down, breathe, calm that down, and it's in the hyper focus that you can alter reality. Well, it doesn't take too far of a stretch to see what, as a society, is being worked against. It isn't just magical operations which take me in hyper-focus. It's any kind of critical thinking or any kind of ability to not be cognitively impaired, to be able to look at politics from a rational point of view, to be able to not think emotionally about everything, to be able to analyze and critique. All these things are really leading up to and part of what is magical training, and all of these things are, in a lot of ways, brutally suppressed in our modern society as it is in 2014.
And, you know, we don't even notice these things. They're hidden right in plain sight. I mean, even the idea, you mentioned MTV, you know, 30-something years later after MTV, I finally get it. MTV. MTVision. MTV. MTVision. You know, music television. MTVision. It's totally there, right in the name. And that's exactly what you said. It's the accelerated stimuli, the overload of sensory, you know, what you're getting, the reports that are coming in, and that leaves you open. Critical thinking is decreased in that state. You're more anxious, you're more agitated, and you're more easily susceptible to suggestion, especially as you probably are familiar with, post-hypnotic suggestion as it's being delivered to your, you know, subliminal centers. We know for a fact that when you receive a message subliminally, it's stored in your mind with an emotional attachment. And when you are represented with that image later on, you recall it like a memory because it has an emotional attachment. Even if it was a false notion or bit of information to begin with, it is now recalled with a much greater sense of veracity because it is a memory with an emotion attached to it.
Oh, yeah, and we could have a whole series of shows just about how exactly this works. And
would love to.
Yeah, and this is a problem. Like, I know I'll take flack for saying this, but really, in the modern age, the path of the magician is the path of the rebel. You are a rebel. There is no doubt in my mind that the path of the magician is a rebellious path. And not in the way that people think, not in... Although I love punk rock, you know.
We you do know. Too.
It's not.
Hey, can I go off topic for just a second? You mentioned punk rock, and I'm sorry, I just remembered I'd seen in the New York Times yesterday that Johnny Rotten is actually going to play, I think it was Judas Iscariot in a new interpretation of Jesus Christ Superstar that's going on in New York City, and I thought it was really kind of strange.
Surreal.
Yeah.
There you go.
So anyways, the path of the rebel. Go ahead, Andrea. The path of the rebel and the magician.
Yeah, and not everyone would agree with that. Especially, I think I would get in trouble with the occultists who are much more ceremonial-based, but not Lon Milo Duquette. I think me and him might agree, actually, on this. Because why would you take up magic? In a way, you know, you're looking to get rid of all this stuff that's put in your head and become truer to yourself. That's one thing. Or at least get the life that you want. Either way, there's a lot of cutting. There's a lot of rebellion. You're rebelling against the fate that has been given to you. And instead choosing something different.
Or now, rebelling against the paradigm that you've inherited.
Or rebelling against the paradigm. Or rebelling against your situation. There's some X factor of why you just will not accept where you're at, and you will go toward, you will move towards something else. That is, in fact, an act of rebellion. It's an act that many people never make that extra step. You know, it's, they will go through life, they will fall into things, and that's how their whole life lives. And it's, as Gurdjieff would say, they're asleep. They're the same as if they're asleep. They're just going through the motions. They're not really living life. You know, to live life is actually sort of rebellious in the modern sense. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I that made me think again about when you were talking about advertisements and all of the things that were just like that are just like a barrage of these things that we quote unquote need. I can't tell you how many times I see pharmaceutical advertisements with, don't get me started on the litany of side effects that go along with these drugs that are intended to treat something.
Here's a drug to treat your anxiety. It may cause death, anxiety, death, depression, like heart attacks.
But you'll smile every so often or something or other. But, you know, and so I started thinking, well, the magic, it's to me, it, as well as a certain kind of like magical practice, whatever, it seems to be also like kind of a spiritual discipline. I mean, you mentioned how Peter Carroll had taken some from Buddhism and modified it to his own thing. And I don't think the Buddha would have had a problem with that at all. I mean, that's kind of what the whole point of it all was anyways, is to find your own path and your own truth, you know. And I was thinking that, like, I wonder if some of these physical maladies that we're, you know, being told that we need this drug or that drug to take care of, if it could all, or some of it anyways, it could really be helped with a change of perspective and maybe magical practice or getting to the root of yourself.
Well, a lot of the issues that I think a lot of listeners face might come down to a sort of frustration, right? An existential frustration. They want their life to have meaning. Now, of course, chaos magic might say, you know, there's no meaning but what you make, but that's quite liberating if you think about it. But this frustration is part of the modern zeitgeist. Nobody is happy, really. Very few people are happy at their work. Very few people are happy with the situations that they're in. And magic, at least from my perspective, is the path of saying, very good. I'm not happy with this, this, and this. Now what am I going to do about it? Like, what am I going to take personal responsibility, and I'm going to change what I can, understand the rules of metaphysics, and create the life that I want to have, or the life that I want other people to have, in the case of, you know, social magic and trying to create ideas and social things. And this doesn't happen without the discipline, because for the same reason that we've been talking about with the ad stuff. And I mean, today it's gotten this anti-commercialism type of thing. But mind you, I'm not against commercialism. You know, I'm going for a master's in business administration. So it's not that I hate money. I just hate the way our society dehumanizes everyone. This isn't...
Definitely.
It's not the way we're supposed to live. You know...
It's not the best we could come up with.
No, it's certainly not the best we could come up with. And when I talk about magic being rebellion, I don't want people thinking that, you know, that means go out and start cursing corporations. That's more difficult than people think, first of all. But I mean, get your own mind in order, right? This is the start of the magical training. Get your mind in order. Understand.
I understood that from what I've read so far, that that's a really key point to a key prerequisite of starting any kind of magical practice, that you've got to get right within yourself.
But you're also accomplishing that goal through the magical practice. The magical practice is not only something that requires you to get your mind in order. I mean, you're going to use the magical practice, a person that gets involved in any kind of spiritual path, any kind of spiritual development, they are exerting their will to change their consciousness. Like you've said, Andrea, it's really a really great analogy when you talk about the, you know, we choose to activate our will and adjust our own sails within to the reality of the winds around us, and change our conscience. The change that we have, the impact we have through our will, is the change on our own consciousness, which in fact changes universal consciousness, because we're connected to that. That's the great secret, everybody. We're connected to that universal consciousness. So if you change your own consciousness, you're by almost default changing all consciousness. And, you know, in many ways. But then, of course, that's just one analogy, because there are even more greater realities to what results one could receive or one could find. But I wanted to make a couple of points. You've raised so many great points. Not only have you offered some really great advice, I think, one of the greatest advices that you offered in the last 10 minutes of our talk here was the idea of do research through what you do in magic. You know, so don't just, I liked what you said, don't just go out and try to read a bunch of books like I did, you know, before you apply all this material. But find something that works for you and start doing stuff, and then research the material that's required for the stuff you're doing, so that so you can get the most out of what you're literally actually doing in a very dynamic, real-time way. And I think that's great advice. And also the idea of recording people out there who are aspiring any kind of spiritual development. You can gain so much from journaling, from simply keeping track of your thoughts and feelings throughout the day, and then reflecting upon them and finding something within that you wouldn't even pay attention to necessarily without recording it and going back to it. And I'm sure that you would agree with that, Andrea.
Absolutely. I'm a big proponent of the magical journal and keeping track of things, because the truth is, we don't live, you're not going to be able to correctly remember what you did and what the result was. the only way to see that is if you are actually recording it and putting notes down to paper so that there's a record. And this is not too far from what scientists would actually do. They don't conduct experiments without writing it down and what their expectations were. Now, some of the problems that we haven't covered with magic is one of the fundamental problems and why people get burned out on magic. And I could give people horror stories, since there probably is some things that go bump in the night. But for the most part, one of the things that people expect is magic to work like Charmed or Harry Potter. And this gets them in trouble. I mean, an enormous amount of trouble, an enormous amount of frustration. I'm sure, Frater, you know that this is something you probably run across all the time.
Absolutely. That's what I was referring to earlier about the Hollywood version of things, you know, the Hollywood impressions of magic.
Yeah. Now, physical manifestation and weird things like that do happen, but not as often as Hollywood would like them to portray. And they usually happen at a level of expertise and skill level that's many years into the practice. You might get lucky as a beginner, but for the most part, they don't happen. You know, magic in general tends to be subtle. So you do magic for wealth, and someone offers you an opportunity to make extra hours doing something that you want to do on the side in addition to your job. Now, some people say that's just coincidence, but if you've done a ritual for wealth and that's what comes up, you owe it to yourself. And I'm sure people who have listened are doing magic. You owe it to yourself to attribute that to the magic, whether or not it's exactly true or not, because that's how your magic gets better, as you attribute more and more verifiable things like that. And that's a very subtle thing. That's completely on the general public's mindset, would blow their minds that that is how magic works. But that's very powerful. You know, I can relay a story. You know, I got tired of my day job at not my current job. My current job's awesome, but I got tired of it, so I quit. Because they wanted me to work 60, 70 hours a week. I did not have another job, you know. And, you know, it was more mutual. I was going to quit. They knew I was going to quit. But I used some magic to make sure that I could get unemployment, you know. So I got unemployment, you know. And, you know, worked it so that way, even though they knew I wanted to quit, they gave me a severance package. They knew I was going to quit, but they gave me a severance package. So they could claim that they laid me off, even though that's what I enchanted for. And I didn't have another job, but then I had absolute understanding of my and faith in my magic, and I enchanted, you know, before I did all this, to make sure that I would get another job before my severance package work out. And it happened exactly that way. Is that just coincidence? Now, did I have to go out and do resumes? Yes, I did. Did I have to go do interviews? Yes, I did. And this is a fundamental misunderstanding that I think people have about magic. You know, I did. Go ahead.
I can attest to so much of the same thing you're saying. I just wanted to interject my own anecdotal evidence. It's 7 years ago, almost at the same time exactly, I set out on a deliberate magical path. You know, I joined a couple of orders that are that expected their members to actively get involved in magical practice and develop techniques and go through the basic fundamentals of occult sciences and hermetic arts. And I made a list of my stated intentions, and I did a ritual after I was initiated. Actually, it was part of the initiatory process where I stated out loud my intentions and what I wanted to accomplish, listed them on a piece of paper, which I carried around with me for 7 years. I still have that piece of paper in one of my bags. I opened it up, I think a year or two ago, and looked at the list and found that every single thing on that list had manifested. Every single thing. And I had completely forgotten about the list. It had completely been put to the back of my mind, and I went about my life. And like you said, the subtlety of the results, that it was explicitly exactly what I had, to the point where I said I wanted to be involved in public speaking. I wanted to be... I wanted to improve my knowledge to the point where I would be considered an expert in the occult field, and, you know, to be, you know, moving forward with all the things that are going on right now in my life. Be writing books and all the stuff that's happening, media production and content provision. It's all exactly as I have foreseen.
and this brings up one of the other critical points of why we have problems as magicians is the concept Peter Carroll, and other chaos magicians and Aleister Crowley actually wrote about his desire of result, right? You said the key component there is that you had put it aside and forgot about what you enchanted for, and then it came about. Because in desire result is basically when you go back to, I just enchanted for this, you know, all the money's coming to me, or a new love's coming to me. And it doesn't happen then because you're paying attention to it. And there's a couple reasons for that to happen, but it's one of the secrets is that you have to detach from your actual workings. And I cover that in Hands-On Chaos Magic a fair amount, but other occultists have covered this a lot too. And by that I mean, you have to do the work and then walk away from it. Otherwise, it doesn't get out into the universe, your subconscious mind, whatever you want to call it. It doesn't matter what terms we use at that point, but it never leaves your kind of orbit, and you kind of keep holding it down by thinking about it. You know, there's only two ways that I've seen that you can really successfully do magic. I mean, there's a lot of techniques, but one is it's a desired result where you just try to forget about the outcome that you're enchanting for, or just keep telling yourself, like I do, it's been taken care of. So your mind doesn't dwell on it. Another way is to become the magic you're trying to enchant for. Essentially, you change you so that whatever you are trying to enchant for becomes self-evident, as in it's not possible that it wouldn't happen. That's very difficult to do, the second thing. The first way is where you get like sigil magic and various enchantments. It's easier to do that. The second thing is much harder. And more fulfilling in some ways.
Well, that's great. I mean, this has been an awesome conversation. I wanted to give you an opportunity to let anyone know anything, upcoming events or appearances, or, you know, of course, please give out your contact information and anything pertinent to let the listeners know where they can continue to find out more about Andrea Venimus.
You can go to my website, AndreaVenimus.com. As far as upcoming events, the next upcoming event that I'll be at is the Left Hand Path Conference in Indianapolis. Let me see the dates on that.
Can we just for a moment digress and talk a little bit? It's not even really a digression. It's actually completely relevant. You just mentioned it. Can we talk a little bit about the Left Hand Path for listeners that have heard the term but are looking for a working definition on that?
Well, the original ideas of the left and right hand path come from Hinduism, which is something that I think modern occultists in this country may not always know. But in this country, what it refers to is the right hand path is a path of adoration. So it's the path of you're worshiping a god form who bestows favors down upon you. And in the process of your worshiping the god form, you grow and become into that god form, almost like you would be subsumed by all that is. The left-hand path assumes that you is the path of the adversary, as it were. And this is a gross simplification, but that you are opposed and you gain strength by overcoming the resistances in your life to what you would willfully change. And by doing that, you grow into what would be considered a god or become awake or, in essence, you become something isolate intelligence. From my humble opinion, and I know people will disagree, these two paths are very interwoven, more than it would seem from the definition. And the end point of one is often where you start a loop on the other, and it goes back and forth. The distinction is usually only good as a tool, a metaphor, like so many things.
Okay, well, great. Thank you for that. That's a great summation on that. And let's have the contact information for folks that are listening.
So my webpage is AndreaVitimus.com. And the Left Hand Path Conference in Indianapolis is going to be on July 25th through the 27th. And that will be on my website sooner or later. In October, I'll be down in Texas for the third Western Mystery Conference, which there'll be a lot of cool things going on there. From Polk Runyon, who is a ceremonial magician, probably as famous as Lon Milo Duquette, actually. And, just a bunch of different presenters on Golden Dawn. I'm presenting the art of praxis, or the act of doing magic, and the changes that occur when you actually do it versus, well, read about it all the time. And also, yeah, there you go. See, and then also in October, I'll be at the Crucible out in New Jersey. And that's a pretty fun convention. So that's an occult convention, a straight occult convention. So I'm kind of doing much more occult conventions this year than pagan conventions. So.
And where is that Western Mystery Con? What city is that going to be in?
Austin, Texas.
Wow, in October, huh? That's interesting. I'm going to look into that. That's going to be found probably just westernmysterycon.org or com.
Yeah. And so those are my upcoming events. I am working on a series of videos about fire magic, but I'm still getting everything together to start this series of videos that I'll have for people.
So you have a YouTube channel as well?
Yeah, I have a YouTube channel. There's not much there right now.
We're in the same boat.
But there will be. I'll be running training videos. Obviously, I won't have those on YouTube. They'll be on Vimeo, but they'll be on YouTube a lot of ritual content, and the explanations I'll have for available for sale. So.
Okay. Great.
That's starting soon. I don't know. Besides that, if people want a reading or mojo bags, I generally generally get on Facebook and ask me, and we can come to some arrangement.
That would be Andrea Vitimus on Facebook to contact you directly, or the website as well. We can contact you there, I'm sure.
Yep.
Okay, great. I feel like we've made a new friend with you, Andrea. I hope you feel the same way.
I do.
So, excellent.
So do you guys have any other questions? Because I know I went all over the place. I don't mean to get all conspiratorial about
it. Oh, that's a great point to bring up. Okay, conspiratorial. You mentioned it several times. Let us not forget that from the Latin, and we can thank our good friend Mark Passio for this bit of information, to conspire. Conspire means to share breath with another. That's the literal Latin translation. So conspiracies occur all day long, every day. Every boardroom in America, every office in Madison Avenue, every storefront everywhere, on every main street in every town, everyone is conspiring in one way or another.
There you go. I think it's just you guys were doing this show after the FCC voted to basically kill the internet, and I pretty much am in my anti- screw these corporations phase.
Oh, we're always there, brother. We are always in that state. And so, like my lovely wife mentioned earlier, there's no problem with getting conspiratorial around here, because we perceive this ongoing. I mean, I have my whole theme of this last year has been the material I put together, the presentation called The Secret War on Human Consciousness, because we perceive that there is an ongoing war, an information war, a consciousness war that is depriving us all of our humanity and our birthright.
I gotta be honest. Recently, as I look at what's going on in the culture more, I feel insulted. You know, if there was a conspiracy that they would at least try to not make you feel like you're underneath the boot of dog shit. I mean, sorry.
No, FCC here, buddy. No censorship.
Right. But I mean, really, you know, if everyone wasn't cognitively, like, drummed down by all the things that I was talking about, and actually why I said the magician needs to conceive himself as a rebel, you know, where you're mentally getting yourself in order, you know, years ago, in probably the 50s or 60s, there would be riots for what's going on with some of the stuff now. I mean, the FCC making this decision with a committee chair who used to run telecom, it's like everyone is in such a daze they can't even see it. And they don't understand because they're so concerned about every little thing, you know, and rightfully so, from the militarization of the police to the militarization and, you know, authoritarianism towards their kids, they have actual concerns. And there's so many actual concerns that nobody can actually cope with any of it. And that's the real serpent in the room. That's the by design effort to create so many problems that we no longer can comprehend what's going on, and we no longer can question things because even surviving takes all of our resources.
Oh, definitely, and they keep us distracted with all these divisions and these divisive issues with, like, gender and race and sexual orientation, and keep us distracted with gadgets and TV shows, and you mentioned the militarization of everything, you know, and I mean, for crying out loud, God forbid we actually sit down for a moment and think about what we've all got in common. And I mean, that's really the point there, is that all these things that are given to us to be distracted and to keep divided are there so that we don't just sit there and think about, wait a second, man. You know, I've got more in common with, like, a poor black person or Asian person or Mexican, I'm half Mexican, half white or whatever, than I do with a, you know, upper class, you know, white or even Hispanic or black upper class person. You know, it's just, we don't realize how much we are all getting screwed over because we're too busy pointing the finger at Republicans or Democrats or gays or religious zealots or atheists or whatever, you know, where the people that are really doing the really crappy shit in the world, they're getting away with it because we're too busy looking the other way.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I say, you know, what is the path of the magician in a world that's self-destructing? Well, it has to be the rebel. Because what else are you going to do? You have to take control of your mind.
Absolutely. You have to. This is the, hence the need. Now, you made a really strong point. It is overwhelming. There's so much coming at us, and parents and children and all the things of the modern world. Hence the need to cultivate inner strength and wisdom. What better way than a spiritual path, a spiritual development of your own choosing? I mean, if people listening, listen, I'm not trying to say magic is for everybody, but I mean, guess what? The jig is up. You're already performing some form of magic in every part of your life already as it is. If you don't want to call it that, that's up to you. I'm not saying that you have to call it anything. I'm just saying get in touch with your own inner condition. Everybody out there listening, find that creative center. Find that center of power within through the very basic fundamental mechanics that are laid out in your book, Andrea, which is Hands-On Chaos Magic. The very basic things that he breaks in the first third of the book is the basic mechanics of relaxation, of stillness, of even forms of discursive meditation where you're meditating on thoughts, on specifics, and also meditating on nothing, just being in the moment with the breaths, and all the different variations of that theme. But what is the big picture here? The big picture is we need to all get right with ourselves within. And Mater X mentioned earlier the Buddhist ideal. You know, Buddha, we love to quote the last words of the Buddha because they are our battle cry, as far as I'm concerned. The last words of the Buddha were to doubt and find your own light. You know, that's what he said. So I agree. Everybody, doubt and find your own light.
Absolutely. And one of the things is, and I think it was pretty prescient, or I might have said that wrong, but, you know, is that Aleister Crowley's magical name, Perdobo, means to endure. And everyone listening, and I know you've had Lon on the show, should really think about that after doing magic. What is it? Why did Aleister Crowley take the name to endure? Well, it's pretty obvious, right? Especially in the modern world. What you're enduring is you against the torrent of things that would otherwise distract you from what you want to do. And a lot of the magical path is to figure that out and to figure out what isn't you. Because most of the things, probably in most people's minds, are not them. That's not something like they're, you know, hosted to alien reptiles or something. But the truth is, most of the things in everyone's heads are from conditioning, they're from things like advertisement, and especially if you're the millennial generation or younger, you've been exposed to this from the start. And the truth is that to understand what you really want means you have to mentally become stronger. And not just mentally, I would actually say, you know, magically. Enough that you can tip the scales of luck in your favor when you actually get rid of what you, and get rid of ideas that you know are not you, so you can actually pursue what you want. And if you just do those things, and it's simpler said than done, I know from years of magical practice, you at least can attribute and assign meaning to your own life. And that's probably the greatest rebellion that anyone can do at this point.
I really like how you said that. That was really profound, actually. So thank you for saying it that way.
Yes, that was great. I think that's a great way to end our chat here today, Andrea Vitimus. We really appreciate you making yourself available and taking your precious time to share your insights and the research you've gathered in this really practical, approachable, hands-on guide that I recommend to anybody listening, which is Hands-On Chaos Magic by Andrea Vitimus. And thank you so much, sir, for being a part of this. And like I said, I feel like we've made a new friend, and I hope that we can, maybe we can come on your show in the future or do more podcasts together here.
Well, I hope so. I hope you have me back on, so.
Absolutely. That would be great. All right. Is there anything else you wanted to just add before we close for this episode?
Have fun. Do the magic.
Excellent. Well, thank you, everyone, for participating in this extremely educational conversation with our new good friend here, Andrea Vitimus. And thanks once again for showing up for the Middle Chamber. Stay tuned next week for another great episode right from SyncBook Radio Network. Say goodbye, Mater X.
Goodbye, Mater X.
Goodbye, everyone. Thanks again. Have a great week.
Good night, Andrea.
Thank you for having me again.